Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. I do have Simon Clancy here with me this week, and of course, Chris Kaufman. All right, guys, another week of draft intrigue, more Kyler Murray talk. We now have 3 mock drafts. Charlie Casserly just released his. Todd McShay had released his, and Mel Kiper released his yesterday. And all 3 have Kyler Murray to the Miami Dolphins at 13. Since you're the resident Kyler Murray historian here, Chris, what do you make of this? Is this realistic?
No, it's not. I mean, he's not going to be there at 13. But I think it's more than just those 3. I know that I've read at least 2 or 3 other guys who are very typical in the draft space do a mock draft and have Miami Dolphins taking Kyler Murray, but it's not realistic. He's going to go to the combine. I mean, this is very Cam Newton. Simon and I did a ton of work on Cam Newton leading up to the 2011 draft. Not really leading up to it. We did it in January, essentially. Did a large piece for the Sun Sentinel for Dave Hyde's blog. And, you know, we said, hey, this guy's a number one overall talent. And at that time, it was huge running topic of debate among Dolphins fans because we were picking number 15 overall. And it was like, oh, should we take Cam Newton? Should we, you know, nah, I don't think, like, you know, half the fan base was like, nah, he's not really a first round pick. He's not really worth taking at 15 overall. And then not too long after we release our piece, the combine is happening, and there's a survey among GMs, and over half of them are like, yeah, he's going number one overall. He's the number one overall pick. And I think that the similar thing is happening right now with Kyler Murray, where, yeah, we're spinning our wheels, and we're, as a Dolphins fan base, we're like, yeah, should we take him? Should we not take him? And some of us are getting, you know, super hot on him. And then it's just going to be moot because he'll end up one way or another going number one overall or top 4 or somewhere that's like just either out of reach totally, or, you know, to where it stretches Miami's resources beyond the breaking point to try to trade up to there, and it becomes moot anyway. So I mean, that's where this is heading,
which is what I think will happen.
Yeah.
Simon?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't think he won't last till 13. And I think we knew that all along. We've talked about it for long enough. And certainly Chris and I have talked privately about that fact, and that, you know, he is what he is, which is, you know, he's 3 inches short of being the number one overall pick without even a question. So, you know, and we know the concerns, but we also know the skill set. I mean, it's interesting to me as to how it's all going to play out. And I think probably a team will trade into the top 5 to take him, whether or not that's the, you know, whether the Raiders trade even higher, whether it's the Giants move up, the Jags, you know, you look at the Broncos, you look at the Bengals, you know, Zach Taylor, Andy Dalton, you know, that's a franchise going nowhere fast. Obviously Miami, but I don't think, and I'll touch upon it in a sec, but I don't think the Dolphins are moving up anywhere. Then you look at Washington, you know, you may even look at Pittsburgh, New England, or the other team who potentially could, you know, they've got an awful lot of picks in the top 3 rounds. You know, but I think there's zero, unless he injures himself or his arm falls off or something, there's no way he's going to last at 13. If Miami want him, they're going to have to move up. I've been indicated from somebody who's relatively close to the situation that I don't think Miami will move up and actually will get to him. I think there's an element that thinks that Miami is very, very comfortable in a situation where they may find themselves with the possibility of 4, 5, depending on Jacob Eason and Jordan Love and those guys. And, you know, where we sit here now, if people continue to progress with no injuries, I have been indicated that Miami are very comfortable with what will happen this time next year in terms of, yeah, Tua looks like he could be a potentially transcendent prospect. Miami are very comfortable with Justin Herbert. We know that Mike Tannenbaum went to see him at least 7 times last season. You don't just do that for for shits and giggles, especially to the West Coast. Then you've got Jake Fromm, obviously, who's developing, you know, hard and fast at Georgia and was tremendous, certainly down the stretch. So, you know, I think I do think if Miami doesn't get its hands on Kyler Murray, and I don't think it will be possible to do so without moving up. Ergo, I don't think they'll get their hands on him at all. I think that there will be a rebuilding process either along both lines or in the secondary, given how much that New England defense is predicated on secondary play. That's just how I feel about it. That's just sort of some of the indications that I've got. But, I would be surprised if Miami ends up with Kyler Murray.
Now, during all this hype, the guy that's getting completely ignored is Dwayne Haskins. Now, not too long ago, he was considered a top four prospect, and Kyler Murray was barely a first-round prospect, according to a lot of the NFL intelligentsia. Would you have any inkling to drafting Dwayne Haskins if he dropped to 13, Simon?
I mean, I certainly don't take what the inverted commas NFL intelligentsia says in December, January time, because that's just bullshit, frankly. It's just smoke.
Yeah.
People don't know. You know, and as much as we all like doing mock drafts, people don't know. So much is going to change. I mean, have you ever come across anybody who's ever done a mock draft that's even been 75% right, you know, in January or February? Not even. I mean, if you get three picks right, I think you're doing well, given the amount, especially the way that teams have been, you know, trade up and down the board these days and things. I like Haskins a lot. I thought he had a very good season. I thought he started well. I watched him intently against Penn State, and he threw up some concerns in the first half, was terrific in the second half, those concerns being he doesn't particularly handle pressure well. He's not mobile at all, but he's big. I think he's very accurate. He makes NFL throws. He throws people open. He throws on time. He doesn't have a massive arm, but his arm is more than big enough. He's big. I thought he was tremendous against TCU. I thought he was tremendous down the stretch against Michigan. I thought he was outstanding. I thought in the bowl game he was outstanding. I thought he did a great job to come back and sort of keep Ohio State's playoff hopes alive against Maryland, where it almost felt like he was carrying the team up and down the field as Maryland Ohio State just couldn't get off the field, and it was almost left to him down after down after down, drive after drive to bring the team back. And he didn't play brilliantly in terms of he wasn't zinging ball, but he was doing enough, and I thought that really showed some moxie. I saw him firsthand from the sideline against Michigan State, and he was awful. I didn't think he played very well. It was very cold that day. Michigan State struggled. Michigan State, decent defense, but all the court, Rocky Lombardi and Brian Lewerke struggled as well. It was, as I said, it was like throwing a brick around. It was a poor game, and he played very poorly, but what I liked about him was that he dug his way back from a sort of a bit of a blip mid-season. He's inexperienced. He's only played one season. I don't think you want to start him, you know, overall on the opening day of the season. But I do think he's got upside. And I do feel like, you know, there's going to be a situation where, you know, if somebody does move into the top 10, do the Giants put off the Eli Manning decision one more year? Does Nick Foles end up in Philadelphia? Because so much is going to change with free agency and with trades. It feels like Nick Foles is the perfect fit in Jacksonville. Did I say Philadelphia? It's late. Nick Foles is going to end up in Jacksonville, potentially. So what do the Giants do? What do Washington do, for example? Well, if Dwayne Haskins is on the board at 11, you know, if you're the Washington Redskins, you've got to be thinking, I need to get in front of Miami to, you know, with Alex Smith's situation, given that horrendous broken leg up in the air, the fact that he may not even play next season, Dwayne Haskins would look like an absolutely, you know, perfect selection for Washington and for Jay Gruden. So again, I think he's a very intriguing prospect. I suspect he probably doesn't get to 13, and part of me thinks as drastic as the NFL intelligentsia, those people again, would make out if Miami were to pass on him. I don't think you should be forced into taking a quarterback just because he's there, because you don't, you know, if you don't particularly like him, or if you feel like actually our chances are better served in 12 months' time, and we're happy with the path that we're going on. I don't feel like you should be forced into taking somebody, because that's what the NFL believes. You know, that's what Twitter believes that you should do. You take a guy if you love him, especially at that position. You don't force it because you feel like that's what everybody else expects you to do. And it feels very much like Miami have a plan. You know, and that plan will harden and become more resolute as we get towards the draft. But if Dwayne Haskins is not part of that plan, then so be it. I think people shouldn't be surprised if they ignored him. Were he there, and again, much like Kyler Murray, I would be very surprised if he was there, just given the nature of quarterbacks. I know what you think, Chris, because you know we've obviously had this subject off air as well. This conversation.
Mm-hmm. I think that this is the guy probably that's more relevant to discuss at possibly being there at 13 than Kyler Murray. I think that Kyler Murray is not going to be there at 13, but that Dwayne Haskins might be, because the way this is all shaking out, the way everything lays, the one reason that everybody has had Dwayne Haskins up high until now, I think, has been because they just assume that the New York Giants are going to take him. Mm-hmm. And I think the New York Giants fan base clearly want that to happen. And, you know, maybe there's some reason to believe that the Giants are onto him. I don't know. I'm not sure if that's actually based on anything solid. If they don't, though, the Jags are getting Nick Foles in free agency. We're agreed on that. Like, that's probably what's going to happen. The Denver Broncos just got Joe Flacco, and so they're not feeling urgent about this year. Peter King made sure to say that, you know, John Elway, his quote is that he's sure to take a quarterback this year or next year, not necessarily this year. And the rumor is that they really love Drew Lock anyway, and that's been rumored since I was sitting next to some Denver Broncos insiders at the Shrine practices we were talking about. And he's like, you know, John Elway is absolutely in love with Drew Lock. And so if that's the case, then it's really the Giants, unless the Bengals decide that they've got to do it. And, you know, the Giants pass, if the Giants don't love him as much as their fan base does, then he goes tumbling down the board, probably all the way to Miami's pick at 13. That's what I think. And it could easily happen that way, because the Giants passed on Sam Darnold last year. They passed on, you know, Josh Rosen and Josh Allen as well. And maybe they just have certain standards about their quarterbacks. Eli Manning looks like he's probably going to be back in town again this year. So maybe they don't feel urgent. Maybe just like Simon mentions about Miami, like feeling comfortable about next year's quarterbacks class. Well, what if everybody does? What if everybody feels comfortable about next year's quarterbacks class, including the New York Giants? Then Dwayne Haskins goes tumbling down the board. Now, why was he up there in the first place? I thought that was premature. I thought that was premature to put him in that top five area. I didn't think that he was worthy of that as a prospect. I've always liked him. I've had a hard time really loving him as a prospect. We've been talking about him since the very beginning of the year. But he's hyper accurate. You know, his timing is fantastic. He throws with a lot of anticipation and trust, particularly trust in his receivers, and he reads the defense well. He does a lot of things really, really well. But as Simon mentioned, against pressure, he has this tendency to look very heavy limbed. You know, like his feet are heavy, and his arm is heavy, and you know that, and he's not moving. He's not quick twitch that way, and so he has a hard time resetting and doing things against pressure and doing things with a trash in the pocket. And then the other thing is that I've always said is, listen, I mean, I'm not sure what his true arm strength is or not, but I know that on the field, so for much of this year, he hasn't been showing it, or he hasn't been showing NFL throwing power and velocity. He's throwing a lot of touch passes out there, a lot of, accurate. He's going for accuracy, not necessarily power, and he's not showing the velocity that NFL teams will ask him to show at the next level. At the next level, they're going to ask him to wing it, to squeeze it. And you never know what happens when the guy is asked to do that until he goes out there and does it. You know, Will Greer at the Senior Bowl tried to throw with a lot of power to impress the NFL scouts, and he kind of came apart. And so if Dwayne Haskins, now I will say this, against Northwestern, which is probably the most impressive game I've seen him have all year, Northwestern, he did throw with that power and that velocity that the NFL wants. and he had maybe the best game he's had all year. So that's the tantalizing aspect of Dwayne Haskins. But, you know, do it more. This is one game, 1 year. I mean, that's the problem with a one-year guy, right? You've only seen him one season. You want to see him go season to season and see, really get a lot more input, and you don't have that with Dwayne Haskins. So I don't know that I would put him in that top five area. I think it's going to be a really wicked question for Miami at 13, because if they are focused on 2020 and the quarterbacks class there, and Justin Herbert, who I think is probably the guy that is most likely to be their target in that class, then maybe they'd pass on Dwayne Haskins too. And maybe the Washington Redskins, they leave him for the Redskins at wherever they're picking, 15 or something like that.
I think fans' expectations should be that if that's the decision that the team, because you can imagine what will happen if Haskins is on the board at 13 and the Dolphins pass on him.
Oh, yeah.
You know full well what's coming. There will be an absolute meltdown, both from fandom and from, you know, analysts and pundits and those sorts of things, who will absolutely bury the Dolphins for doing so. But like I said, I don't think you should be, you shouldn't fall into the trap of thinking that you have to take a guy if that doesn't fit your scheme, your plan, your idea. And I would commend the team for doing that if that's what, because clearly if they did pass him, they would be doing so for a reason, not to be obsequious or anything. That's just how it would be. I think the other name that we kind of need to throw in, because he's been talked about so much in the top 10 area, mainly because he's been linked with the Denver Broncos, is Drew Locke. I mean, there is, you know, he is going to be a guy that has an appeal. You know, I know Alf, certainly mid-season, we had a conversation, the three of us, you know, Alf was very high on Locke.
And the other two of us.
Yeah, a little bit. But, you know, he does flash, you know, he does flash NFL-level ability. You know, he also flashes utter retardation at times that makes, you know, that infuriates. But look, lots of really good NFL quarterbacks were annoyingly annoying at times in college, made stupid decisions, made bad throws, and fell into bad habits. You know, the simplification of his offense concerns all of us, but there is legitimate NFL talent there. And it's clear that people are viewing him in the top 15 to 18 area, much more now so than Daniel Jones, obviously much more so than Will Greer. It feels like three quarterbacks have separated themselves from the field, and it is clearly these three. And Locke, there is talent to like there. You know, he is going to be appealing to somebody because he has that Brett Favre type wow to his game.
Yeah, the very best of Drew Locke is pretty damn good. Now, let me say this. Last year, we had ideas about Josh Rosen and Josh Allen. Is Dwayne Haskins and Drew Locke in the class of those two guys as a prospect? I'll go to you first, Simon.
Who did you say, Josh Rosen and who?
And Josh Allen.
That's a good question. It's a good question. I don't think so. And I'm not a massive Allen fan. I do like Rosen. And I think it would be intriguing if Arizona decided to deal Rosen, despite the protestations of Cliff Kingsbury. Just in terms of where he ended up, because I don't think he had a great year, but you look at the surrounding cast, it was difficult. Offensive line and receiver and tight end core, obviously David Johnson, but, you know, Johnson coming back off the injury. Allen had a very up and down season and then sort of managed to turn it around sort of down the stretch, especially with his legs really, which sort of opened up things in the passing game a little bit more for him, but wasn't great. It's a difficult one. It is a difficult one because there's not a lot of experience when you talk about Haskins. Locke has more experience, but you know, some more brain farts that you possibly didn't see quite as much from the two Joshes. So I'd probably say that the Joshes were one out, but perhaps the upside, long-term upside of Haskins. You know, I know Chris is high on Allen and the potential upside, although, you know, it feels like there's a lot of work to be done to really get to the level that you hope he might do. I still think Rosen might end up being the best of all of them, actually, in time. But we'll just have to wait and see. I would be intrigued to see if he got thrown out into the mix as to whether or not. But then, you know, the Dolphins didn't seem particularly thrilled on potentially taking him last year. So, and it's pretty much the same front office as it was 12 months ago. So why would they be interested? So I think probably the two Joshes would take it for me. And I think Locke's sort of brain fartedness is the thing that holds me back from saying it for the other two, and Haskins' experience, really.
I think that, I mean, if I were to compare Drew Lock to, let's say, Josh Allen, obviously there's kind of like a screw up quality of both of them, right? And Josh Allen and Drew Lock as well. But the difference is that Josh Allen is just absolutely otherworldly talent level as far as his arm and his legs, his full body, strength, mobility, everything. And Drew Lock is impressive, but doesn't have that. And yeah. I think that if you were to compare, I think Josh Rosen versus Dwayne Haskins is actually an interesting comparison as well. And if you do look at that, I think that Josh Rosen did a lot more resetting his feet with trash at his feet and under pressure. And he was not known as a mobile guy, certainly. Right. He's not a fast guy, but he did more with that sort of pressure and that sort of trash at his feet than I think you've seen Dwayne Haskins do for much of the year. And there was no, I mean, I never had any questions about Josh Rosen's throwing power or his velocity or anything like that. Cause it was all over, you know, pretty much every game, not just you have to find the one game in the 14 that where he shows it, you know? So I think that I would Josh Rosen kind of a superior version of Dwayne Haskins to me and Josh Allen, a superior version of Drew Lock. So yeah, you take both of those above, as you say, the two Joshes above Dwayne and Drew. But the question of course then becomes, if the Cardinals do the thing that everybody is kind of saying that they're going to do because it's a good storyline, but that the Cardinals themselves are like, we're not even close to thinking about this. But if they're lying and they take Kyler Murray and now they've got to deal Josh Rosen, Simon, you're pretty high on him. You're pretty high on Josh.
Yeah, that was a question I asked. I asked Chris last week, and we're almost like a married couple because I was going to ask that question right now. And Chris stole my thunder. So I'll steal it right back, and I'll ask it of you, Simon. Okay, Kyler Murray goes number one. Obviously, that's a surplus of young quarterbacks. And if you take Kyler Murray number one this year, then you kind of know that that is the future. And Josh Rosen just standing there staring around and without a job. Do you send number 13 to Arizona for Josh Rosen?
I'd certainly think about it. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see the New York Giants be involved in a Josh Rosen. I mean, I was reading a couple of days ago from Manny Schmetta, who was talking about how the Giants were intrigued, very intrigued in Rosen. And they certainly kept that under wraps a little bit because there was a talk of Darnold and whatever. And obviously, they went for Saquon Barkley in the end. But I would... You know, he didn't have a great year, let's be honest, you know, but then I don't think many people would have a fantastic year behind that offensive line. Yeah, I know. And I think I 100%. And I think people are certainly overplaying his bustability and his bad year. I think he completed sort of 56-57% of his passes. His quarterback rating wasn't great, but the offensive line was abysmal. You know, he was getting hit or sacked an awful lot. Receivers, you know, Larry Fitzgerald is a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he's also, you know, 109 years old. And, you know, that's a struggle when you know the ball's going to Fitzgerald and he's double covered or they roll a safety over the top or whatever. That's not an easy assignment for anybody, especially when a cornerback's running for his life. I'm kind of hedging my bets here. I would be intrigued in that situation. I really would be. But I wonder whether or not Miami, who didn't seem to be particularly, you know, enamored with Rosen last year when he started to fall into our direction, whether or not I might do it. I don't think the Dolphins would do it.
I don't think I would do it personally. And the reason, you know, I was kind of more on the marginal side on Josh Rosen last year at the number 11 pick, which is to say I'd very much consider taking him there. But I'm not positive I would have done it either. I think that I realize that his rookie season is a rookie season, and rookie quarterback seasons are typically not good. But at the same time, you know, it just because it's not a conclusive incremental data point doesn't mean that it's totally irrelevant either. And I think that he could have come out and had a great rookie season. I mean, it's happened. He didn't. And so you kind of go back and you update what you thought of the guy with some new information. And based on that, you know, it's just it's not worth that number 13 to me. I get more interested if we're talking about the second round pick. Sure. But at number 13, you know, then I start to think about the fact that Miami doesn't care about 2019's record, you know, and that that we are talking about the 2020 quarterbacks and Justin Herbert and you know, maybe even Tua Tagovailoa if they strike the lottery. I start thinking about that and I'm like, well, you know, nah, I'll hold off.
I would not be surprised, and you and I have had this conversation, but if Jake Rudock was our starting quarterback this season,
yeah,
that's right. Would not be surprised at all.
That would be awful.
Yeah.
I'd be horrified.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, well, I would be less horrified. I think there are worse options than him, frankly. But, and I actually think...
Brock Osweiler?
Yeah, I think Brock Osweiler is a worse option than Jake Rudock, actually. I think in the modern... I think in the modern game, for two reasons. One, he has excellent pocket presence in terms of his ability to step up and avoid pressure. And two, he's mobile. Mm. And I think that, in the modern game, I would take that over Brock Osweiler and the rocket arm and the, you know. I just would. I mean, I would not be at all surprised if he was a starter. And I think that the team have talked him up. I think they're relatively, not high on him, but I think they're relatively comfortable with him. You know, Jim Caldwell knows him from the days at Detroit. I don't think it's a coincidence that Jake Rudock is a Miami Dolphin at the moment. And that's, you know, that's probably as high a praise as I can give, because I feel like he is in the mix to start as quarterback next season. I would not be surprised. Because, look, if they really are going to tank, in inverted commas, or, you know, it's not going to be a great season, it's going to be a managed decline, whatever you want to talk about it, you don't want to sign Tyrod Taylor, or you don't want to be involved in the Nick Foles derby, because Nick Foles will win you 7 or 8 games. Yeah. Tyrod Taylor will win you 5 or 6 games. You know, that will take you out of the race for Tua Tagovailoa. That might take you out of the race for Justin Herbert.
Yeah, but let's not forget that Brock Osweiler went 2-3 last year.
Well, but that's still, you know, still 2 games. And if that's 2 wins over 5 games, that's 2 more wins over 10 games. That's 2 more wins over 15 games. That's 6 wins already.
That's sort of why. So that's sort of why I went on a rant thinking that we're not gonna. It's not as realistic as I think a lot of people think to get to it, because first off, if a trade is even on the table, which I very much doubt it is, because I think there are 20 plus teams out there that could find themselves with that number one overall pick and are like, you know, yeah, I would very much like to get the next franchise quarterback of the next, you know, 10 plus years, the next Andrew Luck type prospect in this draft, which is where I think, Simon, you've got to a, as a prospect, rated that high. And I think so many teams out there would not even put it up for sale, because they're like, you know, listen, we've got an aging quarterback inventory out there. Think about that. Think about like how Ben Roethlisberger and Phil Rivers and Tom Brady and Drew Brees and all these guys are really, and Aaron Rodgers even, are all really old. And think about the situations where that team could find themselves picking number one overall. It means that not only are those quarterbacks old, they either sucked really badly or they got hurt. And if they get hurt, then it's over. Then they're going to take Tua.
Exactly. Raiders, Buccaneers, Giants, Jaguars, Lions. Straight off the bat, 5 teams there. Raiders with Derek Carr, Mike Mayock, John Gruden. Who knows what's going to happen there? Peter King reported interest in Kyler Murray. But, you know, unless Derek Carr, and as good as he was in the second half of the season, unless Derek Carr comes out and sets the world alight, they're going to be in for Tua. Buccaneers. Yep. Jameis Winston is essentially on a 1-year deal with Bruce Arians, who loves Winston. They're very close, but, you know, this is do or die. The Giants, obviously, Eli is, what, 38, 39 years old. It's either this year or next year. Mm-hmm. Same with the Jaguars. We talked about Nick Foles. You know, that looks like it's going to happen. But Nick Foles, you know, is 31, 32, has talked about retiring.
And if they end up picking number one overall, it means that sucked.
Exactly. The Lions, you know, we've heard rumors that Matthew Stafford is not long for necessarily, you know, wouldn't surprise me if the Lions got rid of Matthew Stafford, you know, even in this offseason. Then you look at Buffalo, they've got their quarterback. Denver, obviously, with Joe Flacco, who's 30 some odd. You know, the Bengals, we've already talked about the Andy Dalton situation, you know, they are a team that could be the first overall pick next year without even a, you know, Aaron Rodgers is 36. Then there's the Dolphins. Then there's Washington, and all, you know, there's nine teams straight off the bat. Pittsburgh, 10. You know, and then you're heading down towards the Patriots and the Chargers. Yeah.
Absolutely, because you got it. Like I said, you got the aging quarterback inventory out there, but also just think about the situation in which a team would have to find themselves in order to be picking number one. They just went through an immensely crappy season, like 1-15 or something, yeah, like, or 2-14. And what would have to happen in order for that to happen would either be their quarterback this year was very, very disappointing, or their quarterback got injured really all year. And if in either situation, I mean, if you really run down the list, and I've done this before with all 32 teams, if you really run down the list and try and weed out which particular situations are Tua proof, if you will, like, you know, it's basically like Pat Mahomes. Okay, if they somehow find themselves, the Chiefs find themselves 1-15 for some reason, like Pat Mahomes got hurt this year and they were just awful, then they're not going to take Tua. They're going to trade the pick and get, you know, Baker Mayfield. You know, the Cleveland Browns, if Baker gets hurt all year and once again they find themselves in number one overall, they're not going to take Tua. They're probably going to trade the pick for a boatload of picks. But really, if you get down to it, there's probably only like 6 to 8 other situations that you could say, you know, are maybe probably Tua proof, but also maybe not. You know, so I think the chances are that whoever has that pick is not going to have it for sale. And if they do, then you're talking probably 4 first round picks for it.
Yeah.
It's Justin Herbert.
Yeah. Oh, or the one caveat is the year after, which is the Trevor Lawrence derby.
Right on. Which again is another lottery though.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's as big a lottery as you can have. Now I wonder what the price would be on the Miami Dolphins getting the first overall pick next year, or winning the Trevor Lawrence derby, which is never going to happen. But I suspect you could find out with our good partners at betdsi.com. There is no football anymore for you to go down to your... Do you have bookmakers in the States? Do you have betting shops?
Yes, but they're all in Las Vegas. Okay. But the Supreme Court has deemed it legal to have them in every state of the union. The only thing is every legislature now has to approve it.
There you go. Well, you can take your sporting knowledge to the bank at betdsi.com. 20 plus years online. Great, impeccable reputation for service and fast payment of your winnings. Great mobile interface for you to do as I'm doing right now. Sit on the couch. Sit on the couch and bet. I'm sitting on the couch and talking to these two gangsters. But anyway, to help you get started with some extra bang for your buck, they're offering you double your money on your first deposit. So deposit now, start winning, and get up to $2,500 for free. Double your money from the get-go. And when it comes to football, the NFL, college football, I'm sure you can bet on the Alliance of American Football. BetDSI has every wager you could ever imagine. And if it's happening in sport, then they will have a line on it. The NFL, the NCAA, obviously. But Major League Baseball, when it returns. Basketball, March Madness is closing in, undoubtedly. The culmination of the Premier League season over here in Europe. Esports. Pretty much everything you could think of. I'm sure they'll do kabaddi and skiing if you're really into those sorts of things. And you can bet on games whilst they're going on with their live betting. Now, we have a promo code, which is YARDS101. That's YARDS101, which will help you essentially get money off, really. So, betdsi.com is your betting partner. Check them out. They've been fantastic for us. They will be fantastic for you. That is the future of betting, I'm sure. Right, after the break, we shall be back with a little bit of news, because there has been some stuff going on, including a new man in the Dolphins front office.
Hi, this is Craig Mish from Swings and Mishes here on the 5 Reasons Podcast Network. Just in case you missed any of our podcasts in the past, here's what you missed.
We have been extremely aggressive in trying to acquire additional international dollars, not just for, you know, potential free agents with two first names. It's nice that ownership is fully supportive and allowing us to do everything in our power to be the best team in this region, in the gateway to America, and for Miami to become a destination spot for for all Latin players because, you know, this is such an international city.
Hey, it's Seth Levitt here from the Fish Tank with my main man,
OJ McDuffie, the Juice.
And Juice, we've got a special guest over the next 2 weeks in the tank.
What's up, everybody? It's Pat Surtain, and I'm officially diving into the Fish Tank. If he was better than Peyton, he definitely wasn't better than me.
Oh, there we go. That's what I wanted to get at.
Yeah, that's where we're going with it.
Did you and Peyton ever play against each other in high school?
Absolutely. Beat him 35-7.
35-7. Wow. Get out of here.
Oh, yeah. I had 3 rushing and 2 passing on him, accounting for all 5 touchdowns.
Out of hand. And all of them.
Yeah.
Hey, Pat came in here saying he doesn't remember stuff, but he remembered
I remember that.
Make sure you dive into the tank to hear our entire interview with Patrick Surtain here on the 5 Reasons Sports Network. You can catch up on what you've missed and hear new episodes every 2 weeks until July by searching The Fish Tank on Apple Music, Google Play, Podbean, Spotify, or wherever else you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Simon Clancy with Alfredo Arteaga and Chris Kaufman, as always. So, boys, been a little bit of news as we trickle through the offseason, head towards the combine. But the biggest of which is that the Dolphins have taken the decision to bring in the 2016 Front Office Man of the Year, or whatever the award was called, the former Oakland Raiders GM, Reggie McKenzie, who brought, amongst others, Derek Carr, the guy who plays defensive end, whose name has completely escaped me, who was traded to the Bears.
Khalil Mack.
It's 1:30 in the morning. my memory's fucked.
And Amari others.
Amari Cooper, obviously. He was sacked. Mike Mayock took over. But McKenzie has joined Chris Greer and Marvin Allen, the new deputy GM, in what feels like a bit of an all-star front office. What do we make of that? It feels like a good decision. Or does it?
I think that Reggie McKenzie a lot of people feel it's a good addition, and I don't think there's any reason to pan it. It's interesting, though, what you mentioned, you know, sort of this assembling of recognizable names, of high quality, high resume names, Marvin Allen and Reggie McKenzie. Although this one just seems like maybe one too many, in as much as, you know, there's got to be some sort of turmoil after the draft is when guys are let go and move on to some new job somewhere. And there seem like way too many Chiefs in the front office right now between Chris Greer and Reggie McKenzie and Marvin Allen. And it does make me wonder about some of the guys in there and what's going to happen after the draft is done. But until then, you know, this is a quality hire, and is welcome. I thought Marvin Allen was a great hire too for Chris Greer too.
It didn't work out badly for the Browns last year, did it? When they brought in Alonzo Highsmith and they brought in Elliot Wolf and obviously John Dorsey. Feels like a lot of intelligent people in the room.
Very true.
And Alf, you were talking about, you know, it feels as though it won't be a sort of moratorium that Chris Greer will be, that, you know, the maybe not the decision-making process will be shared out, but there will be, you know, a level of conversation around what happens for the benefit of the team that isn't just a dictator telling everybody this is what we're doing. There will be a process, I think, is probably the best way of describing it.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be more by consensus than we originally thought. Like when he got the job, we originally thought that Chris Greer was going to be in charge of everything. And if he failed, then obviously he would be fired and a whole new regime would come in. But what we saw right away was when they got Marvin Allen, the first thought that came to my head was, wow, had we fired everybody, including Chris Greer, Marvin Allen would have been one of my first choices to take over as general manager.
That's right.
Now you add Reggie McKenzie, and had he been available, he definitely would have been a guy I would have interviewed. So what this tells me is that this is not more – we were talking about this yesterday on the WhatsApp chat. This is not King Greer. He's more like a president or head of parliament, let's say. And this will be more done by consensus. Yeah. I don't think it'll be a my way or the highway type thing with Chris Greer. I think he's going to bounce a lot of things off of these two guys because they are eminently qualified. And there I
say, you know, it's interesting.
Marvin Allen is probably a little bit more qualified than Chris Greer because he has some pretty big successes under his belt.
Well, I think that Omar Kelly of the South Florida Sun Sentinel brought up an interesting point. And, you know, this is from him talking to league insiders. But Reggie McKenzie is known as more of a pro personnel guru, and Marvin Allen is more of a college personnel guru. So, you know, sort of like covering the two bases underneath Chris Greer. It looks good. It has a nice look to it.
Can I just say that I'm doing a fan speak mock draft whilst I'm talking to you,
it's my first somehow, right?
Yeah, exactly. The first pick has come up, and the highest rated player still left on the board is one Ed Oliver of Houston, who I'm pretty much guaranteed I'm going to make my first overall pick, 13th overall. So I'm just letting you know. So I am now at my second pick. Players left on the board: Nazir Adderley, Elton Jenkins, the Mississippi State center, Mac Wilson.
Where did Rocky Sin go?
I don't know, but he's not left on the board, so he has gone in the first. Let me have a look and see if he went in the second round. He went.
You said Nazir Adderley is available. What about a favorite of mine, Jonathan Abram at safety?
Yeah, I think he's just gone, actually.
Chauncey
Gardner-Johnson is still there.
Yeah. I think you and I would both probably take Nazir Adderley above him.
Definitely. I'm going to take Adderley. I mean, this has been a strong start for the Dolphins.
What about your boy Garrett Bradbury? He's got to be gone, right?
Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah,
he's gone, unfortunately. I'd have snapped him up.
A bit of news that very quietly under all the other news of the day found its way onto my Twitter timeline this morning. The New England Patriots will not tag Trey Flowers. Is that something we might do, Simon?
Not at 5 years, $85 million, which feels like it's around about the price. I mean, you know, that just doesn't fit in with the rebuild, you know. I mean, unless it's not a rebuild, because nobody really knows what it is.
It's a Tannenbaum rebuild.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? But I mean, I would, because I think he's an absolutely perfect fit. And I think he's a terrific player who can play in, you know, inside, outside, can rush the passer, play the run. He's tough. He's durable. He's got great hands. He just understands exactly what it means to play this defensive system. But I suspect he is incredibly expensive, and teams with more money, more cap space will make a play for him. And why wouldn't they? Because, you know, I think he's a premier player at the position.
I have reservations. I wouldn't do it. Personally, I don't think they would. And I personally wouldn't either. And that's just because with the system that we're talking about, with New England's style of defense, where they have a lot of defensive backs on the field, and they're changing out their personnel according to situations and the requirements of the situation. They tend to get pressure on the passer. You know, it's either up front with the guys, you know, the interior guys pushing the pocket, but it's also with blitz pressure and you know, sort of manufactured pass rush. It seems to me like that New England system, they always find pass rush. You know, they get a guy like a kind of sort of a mid to low level free agent like Chris Long was when he was there, or Jabal Sheard, or they, you know, find Trey Flowers in the third or fourth round, or, you know, that they for the longest time they were getting pass rush out of Rob Ninkovich, who we know is not like a top tier pass rusher, but they were producing with him as a pass rusher. They get pass rush out of Dont'a Hightower blitzing. They get pass rush out of, you know, Kyle Van Noy, who they got for nothing basically from Detroit. It seems like in this system, you know, maybe you've got to buy back end coverage and buy the upfront. You know, they really do need strong upfront play from the defensive line and defensive tackles. And that's why that defensive end that they have, that they got from, his name escapes me, that they got from Baltimore, I believe it was, is so important to them. But,
But I don't know that they you really have to pay 5 years, $85 million for a pass rusher in this style of defense. You do it for Gilmore or Xavier Howard, the analog in our own defensive backfield. You pay for a Minka Fitzpatrick or you know a Devin McCourty type analog. You make sure you get a Patrick Chung in there. You know those sorts of guys. I don't know that you pay for the outside pass rusher. I think that they can find it.
Now a guy that. He's going to make it to free agency, as it seems. And I've been told there is some interest, as in film has been shopped around, although things might change now since everybody's going to be in place, is Alan Bailey of the Kansas City Chiefs. He kind of fits what we might need in a defensive end. Any interest, Simon?
I mean, not for me, Clive. I mean...
He's 29 years old. He could be relatively cheap, under $4 million a year, maybe.
I mean, you look at that Chiefs defense, I'm not, you know, I know that he had one of the better seasons in his career. And, you know, whether or not he's an ascending player or whether or not it's a guy performs well in final year of contract, knowing he could get a decent contract coming up. You know, he's durable. He's played in a lot of games, but... I don't know.
Former Hurricane?
Well, former, yeah, but I mean, what does that really mean? I mean, he played for the University of Miami, great. But I mean, it doesn't really mean anything in the grand scheme of things. And that whole thing about, like, we should draft more players from the U. Well, I mean, should we? I mean, we should just draft really good players. I don't care.
Well, but it could mean if there's competition for him that we should have a leg up on the rest.
Yeah, but you know, where's he been since 2015? But seriously,
evidently,
you know, he had really good seasons playing 2014, 2015. He fell off the grid. Why did he fall off the grid? You know, he's I don't know.
Not Calais Campbell.
Well, he was on injured reserve in 2016.
Well,
that's part of the problem.
I mean, what would you end up paying? 3 years, $30 million, something like that. I mean,
3 years. I would say 3 years. $14 million, something like that, at best.
Do you think? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm going to – you know, that sort of – I think that's kind of the mid-priced, mid-level free agent that exactly is not what interests me.
Well, I've just Googled it here. He's looking for $12 million per season.
Well, he's asking for 12-month season.
He can just buzz off for that kind of price. Actually, a guy that you have liked – or that we've talked about in the past and is playing on – your NFC team, Alf, is Tyrone Crawford is looking like he could be on the cut list, you know.
Yeah.
His salary might exceed, and it's not that he played poorly at all. He's played really well there, but his salary does start to get a bit unwieldy, and I wonder.
I would take him, and then I would take Urban too.
Yeah, oh, David Irving, of course.
I take Irving, 100%.
I take both. I take both. Both make perfect sense. Both could play in our system or whatever system it's going to be, which is it's going to be a multiple type system.
Yeah. I don't know if Irving fits what Patrick Graham really described, defensive coordinator Patrick Graham, when he talked about what he looks for in his players. I don't know that that's – yeah, I don't know that he really fits it too well, whereas I think Tyrone Crawford – does fit it really well, and especially what they like to do with Trey Flowers in New England, you know, moving. I mean, he pass rushed from the inside so much, and Crawford has spent basically half of his time on the defensive line, you know, half of his time at defensive end, but half of it pass rushing the interior from defensive tackle. And so he'd be a good fit, but overall, I mean, unless it's somebody that I could really feel pretty good about it like that. You know, I would rather – they just got a guy, Tank Carradine, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a guy that we liked in the draft once upon a time. He's kind of had a ho-hum career. He has played. He's had some injuries and stuff like that. They got him for nothing. And then you're going to pay 10 times that amount for Alan Bailey? Even Alan Bailey's not 10 times the player.
Well, I have my doubts. I have serious doubts that he's going to get that type of money.
Ten times what Tank Carradine's getting is $5 million here.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what I'm saying, though, is like, I don't want that mid-level, you know, free agent, $6 million a year, $7 million a year, $8 million a year for this team when they don't care, when they're just like totally fucking off in 2019. They don't care.
Well, I'll give you another one. Okay. Well, we don't have many buyers here. Okay. Simon and Chris are not buying what I'm selling. So I'm selling this. How about Alex Okafor from the Saints? He has that Ninkovich look, dare I say? Would he make some type of sense, Simon?
He's juicing.
Who cares?
You said the Ninkovich look, right?
Yeah, he has a Ninkovich look where he could be the type of guy, the kind of cheap slash pass rusher edge type that we might be looking for.
Maybe.
And if he's juicing, that's a bonus.
I think that they got a guy already in Tank Carradine for very cheap that could kind of fill a role, and I'm not sure that they're going to be interested. I guess it depends on what Okafor's price tag is going to be. If we're talking like $1 million a year, then we're starting to get into it. But otherwise, I'm not sure that they would really be interested. Actually, the guy that I passed by and talked about a little bit is Jacksonville Jaguars, who Marion Hobby is going to be familiar with, is Laurenti McCray, who is sort of a pass rush specialist, special teams captain, very low paid guy. And also, by the way, you know, the last 2 years, he's been a defensive end under Marion Hobby and been like a sort of a sub package pass rusher. And he's put up efficiency numbers as far as pressure percentage and stuff like that rivals Cameron Wake. So, you know, that could be more up their alley because he's so cheap and because he's like a good overall dude and special teams captain. You know, I think that's the level that's their speed right now, is they're going to look for guys. And if you think about like some of the things that Bill Parcells did when he first got here in 2008, I think that there's going to be a lot of similarity there, and maybe remember Randy Starks was probably their biggest free agent acquisition back then. Mm-hmm. And Randy Starks made like what, $4 million a year.
And great player, by the way. I love his time here. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, but that's sort of where I think that we're heading is, you know, maybe one of those mid-level guys and then a bunch of really low-level. They had like a corner that they signed for really low money too that was supposed to start, and then they got cut in camp. You know, and back then Josh McCown was supposed to be the quarterback. I think it's going to be stuff like that.
All right. Now, we've been talking about a lot of low-level free agents. There's one guy who's not going to be low-level, and I'll give you a little preamble, in which is Chris Greer this week said that he will allow his position coaches to make decisions based on their evaluations on who they want to keep this free agency period. And Pat Flaherty, who is the new offensive line coach of the Miami Dolphins, it's been reported by Barry Jackson or speculated on by Barry Jackson, that he wishes to have Juwan James back. Simon, how do you meet this news? And how far or how deep are you willing to go to keep Juwan James?
I mean, two things. I'd keep him because I think that otherwise you're just replacing him with somebody else, and you have to find a pick that you could use. You know, you've got a serviceable, more than serviceable player. Obviously, the money has to be right. But otherwise, you're then looking for somebody else. Finding good right tackle play in the NFL isn't easy. And I think you know, we've talked about this before, but I think if you're getting average to slightly above average play at that position, you're doing pretty well. And I think he's one of the better right tackles in the NFL. He's not perfect, far from it. But he generally is a pretty decent player. I wouldn't want to be spending. I mean, I read something today that said the Dolphins were potentially going to make him. It was in the Herald, actually. It was in Barry's piece talking about what Pat Flaherty had said, that the Dolphins were potentially looking at making him the most expensive right tackle in the NFL, which would make me nervous. Not nervous. It's not my money. I couldn't give a fuck. But, you know, generally, you know, I kind of don't want to win the off season anymore. I want to kind of win in season, and I'm not necessarily sure that the first move that the new era Dolphins should make is making, you know, a decent but not brilliant right tackle the most expensive right, you know, the most well-paid right tackle in the NFL. So I kind of would want to see what the money is before I committed to him. But overall, I kind of want to keep him, I think.
I'll play devil's advocate here, because when I saw that quote from Flaherty, and I originally saw it on, I think it was Saturday, because it was in the transcript of all the assistants, their interviews that happened, I think, last Friday. I didn't really think it was that big of a deal, what he said. He was just like, you know, he's asked about Juwan James, and he was like, oh, yeah, sure, would love to have him back. I've seen all his games, and, you know, he's pretty talented, and, you know, wonder if we can make it work. It didn't seem like that big of an endorsement to me. And it also was like, you know, yeah, if the price is right. And if the price is right, doesn't sound like making him the highest paid right tackle in the league to me. And in fact, if that's the case, then I'm going to let him go off and get that money from somewhere else and then collect the compensatory pick for it, as long as they don't screw up the formula. And it's going to be, if it's going to be that high, it's going to be a third rounder too. So it's going to be a significant pick. I think that you let him go, and then you just, you know, I can pick guys that can play right tackle. Jesse Davis can go off and play right tackle. You know, it's not that
on the Jesse difficult. Davis train. You
didn't. Oh God, that makes me last year. That makes me nervous. Like, just Jesse Davis starting makes me worried enough.
Jesse Davis as right tackle for Jake Rudock doesn't turn you on.
I mean, I think I'd rather. I don't even know what I'd rather do, but Christ knows it wouldn't be that.
Well, look, this is the way I see it, okay? I have here in front of me the base salaries, the highest base salaries for right tackles in the NFL for next season, okay? Lane Johnson's number one at $10.8 million,
yep.
Okay? Then you have Ricky Wagner at $9 million, Leo Collins at $8.5 million, Ryan Schrader, who's really good, at $6.25 million, okay? But these are guys that are coming off to their second contract. Lane Johnson is the one that kind of qualifies with Juwan James as far as what he could be asking for. I don't think that Juwan James can really command a contract higher than Lane Johnson's. So he should be in that 9 to 10 range, 9 to 11 range. So I say, why not? Look at the salary cap. You want to open up a hole at right tackle? Why not have your bookends ready for the next 4 or 5 years? And that way you have less work to do on that offensive line, because God knows you already need an entire interior offensive line. If you now jettison your right tackle too, now you need an entire offensive line except for your left tackle. So I think he's not a guy that we can afford to lose. And if you can get him for that type of deal, why not?
I'm not convinced. I think that $10 million a year, you're talking about a significant sum of money. For a right tackle, you can get right tackles. You can get solid right tackle play. Laramie Tunsil is going to be here, and Laramie Tunsil deserves to be here, and Laramie Tunsil is going to cost a pretty penny to be here. I don't want to have to pay, you know, $25 million a year for my tackle bookends for guys that we've had playing at the tackle bookends for 2 years now, and that, honestly, has it been that impressive? I mean, I know that Laramie Tunsil has been impressive for some of the time, especially this last year, but Juwan James has been very up and down. And every other year, he misses half the season, basically injured. I'm just not going to do it. I can find a right tackle. If you're a good GM, would you get Reggie McKenzie here for? Would you get, you know, Marvin Allen here for, if it's not to be able to find a right tackle? I mean, that you need to pay for that? I don't buy it. I would not do it. I would let him go off, and I'd collect the compensatory pick. It's a harder question, quite frankly, with Cameron Wake, even though he's ancient and we don't care about the 2019 record, evidently. But he's such a good player, and he's so, you know, such a good presence on this team. And Lord knows he deserves better than to be given short shrift by the team. But yeah, I mean, that's a harder decision. And even on that, I'm like, let him go and collect the compensatory pick for that as well. So, you know, I'll take a pass on this, on both of, on that
you,
guy.
You, you can see them picking up somebody like the Adrian Waddle, the Patriots guy, backup right tackle, to Marcus Cannon, and you know, if that's the path they chose to go down,
or somebody that gets cut so that it won't interfere with the compensatory form.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that we're on our way out here, let's just do a little bit of general NFL talk. And let me throw this question out to you both. First to you, Simon. Why is it that all these super talented wide receivers are all crazy? Because Antonio Brown has essentially lost his mind.
And Odell Beckham.
Yeah. Well, Odell Beckham has been crazy. But Antonio Brown is newly crazy.
Newly crazy.
Yeah.
I think he's been crazy for a while, hasn't he? I mean, I saw that quote where he was fine when he was Antonio Brown, then when he became AB, he became a bit of a head case. And that's what receivers are like, right? I mean, they've always, throughout history, they've been, you know, diva-ish. I can remember going to the Pittsburgh-Carolina game in mid-season in Pittsburgh where the Steelers won like 52-7 or 52-14 or whatever. And even though the game was a blowout, and you know what it's like when you're in the media, you go downstairs with 4 minutes, usually about 4 minutes to go in the game, you go downstairs to the locker room so that you're there and the players come through. And we went down and Brown came off the field with about 3.5 minutes left in the game. And his team was still out there. They were ahead. And by the time we got into the locker room, he was leaving the locker room. He had this massive fur coat on and, you can only say what you see, but it just felt like he wasn't part of the team. The fact that he came off the field on his own whilst the game was still going on. He was chatting to his girlfriend and his long-term girlfriend. There were like 3 or 4 kids running around and stuff. And then by the time all the other players had come in, AB was coming out. And he was dressed very, he was he's an extravagant man. And it just didn't feel like he was connected to the team. And what I thought was quite intriguing was that it was a game in which Juju Smith-Schuster had a big night.
Yes, I remember that.
And Smith-Schuster caught the 80-yard touchdown or whatever, and he went and did the podium. So, you know, the quarterback, the head coach, and the best other player go and do the podium for the media where you sit and ask a load of questions. When he came back into the locker room, normally what happens is you can talk to the guy who comes off the podium, if they're not a quarterback anyway, just to have a chat with them. And so I wanted to go over and talk to Smith-Schuster because I wanted to do a piece on Smith-Schuster for the magazine. And he was, lots of other journos, and he went near him and he was like, I'm not doing any interviews, just done a load of podium stuff. And you just think, oh, Juju, come on, dude. You're a second-year receiver. I hope Brown's sort of diva-ish behavior isn't rubbing off on you. So you end up talking to Darius Hayward Bay and to Ryan Switzer and guys like that who are lovely, but you just sort of thought, it just left a bit of an uncomfortable taste in the mouth to think that, crikey, is this Brown rubbing off on you, or is this just, you're just tired? And because you caught like 7 passes for 180 yards and a couple of touches and a couple of touchdowns, and don't be a diva. So I don't know, that's just a tiny snapshot, but I mean, receivers are freaks, aren't they? They're just fucking morons.
Makes you wonder if the problem with, Albert Wilson and Jakeem Grant is they're just too nice. Cool. Like they need to be assholes. And then they really explode.
Now, what do you guys we're about to get out of here, but what do you guys make of all these rumors about Odell Beckham almost being traded to the New England Patriots last year? First you, Chris.
Ah, fuck them. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the Patriots, what have you got to lose if you're in New England? Mm-hmm. You know, you've got so many picks in the first 3 rounds. You're looking at a bit of, there's a Super Bowl legacy. We're kidding ourselves if we think the Patriots are going away anytime soon. They're not. You know, it feels like Brady is declining, but, he declined enough to win a Super Bowl. I mean, and they're not, but it's true. They're not going anywhere. You re-sign Trent Brown.
I guarantee they will not go undefeated next year. Okay.
No, they won't go undefeated, but I guarantee that they'll be in the playoffs.
I'm curious about all the coaches they've lost, and and I don't know if they're done. I don't know if they're done.
It's over. It's over. It's the end.
It's definitely not the end. It's the end for me because I'm going to bed, but unfortunately, it's not the end for them.
All right, guys. That's it. There is no more. Next week, we start talking Combine and we ramp up our draft coverage. But till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.